I know that you've got heart disease. It's not diagnosed. It's just, you know what's going on inside their arteries based on the way they eat. And you just think there's going to, it's the train wreck that you see coming. And that is really, really hard.
That was Jenny Cameron, and this is the Big Impact Podcast. Hello. Welcome back to another episode. I'm your host, Anna Chisholm. And I'm super excited to share this episode with you. Jenny Cameron is a little bit of a legend in terms of whole food, plant-based Australians. And in actual fact, I'm pretty sure she's probably known in all different parts of the world for her wonderful work and her beautiful website, Whole Food Plant-Based Health, and her Facebook group, Whole Food Plant-Based Aussies, which is a fantastic online community of people sharing their information, their recipes, their questions, their struggles, their wins, everything related to whole food, plant-based health and nutrition. So if you don't know about that group, I will put the link in the show notes to that. It is absolutely fabulous. So jump on over. Look, this conversation is a really cool one. Jenny talks to us about her experience or transformation, I guess, from librarian to plant-based nutritionist, and that she has made it her mission since going plant-based to really educate and inspire others to follow this path. Look, don't worry if you're not Australian. This episode is really a great one wherever you are in the world. And we cover topics in this conversation, around Jenny's own journey to plant-based nutrition, the intersection, I guess, between librarian or researcher and nutritionist, her top picks of plant-based resources, the hottest topics at the moment amongst whole food plant-based Aussies. And she shares with us a really cool highlight from one of the international plant-based nutrition conferences she's been at. So stick around towards the end. She shares that really cool experience that she had. So I hope you guys enjoyed this conversation. I really enjoyed having it, and it is really full of goodies. So listen the whole way through. This one goes just over an hour, but it's really worth taking the time to listen. Cool. Enjoy. I am sitting down today with the lovely Jenny Cameron. Thank you so much for being here. It's really fun, I guess, to get the chance to interview you and pick your brain a little bit more and find out, about your own story. So thanks for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thank you, Anna. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm almost a bit overwhelmed. I feel like me in the spotlight.
I know. You're kind of a behind-the-scenes girl, aren't you, usually?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
Good. Well, I feel honoured then that I'm dragging you out and everyone will get to know you a bit more. I think people are quite interested to hear more about you because, you play such a crucial role in, I guess, guiding other people through their transition, I guess, to a whole food plant-based diet. So to be able to shine the light on you and find out what or who guided you and what inspired you and motivated you, I think is going to be really interesting. Mm-hmm. So I guess on that note, can we start by maybe taking it back a little bit to when you first went plant-based and kind of how you became interested in that? Who was your inspiration and what were you learning at that time? What was the trigger for you to change your diet? Or were you always plant-based from a small child? I don't even know your story.
No, I definitely wasn't. I was someone who I would say I always leaned in towards being vegetarian, but never quite went there. In my younger adult days, I kind of experimented with it. But for me, being vegetarian was being egg and cheesetarian as well. So the concept of a plant-based diet, I was completely unaware of until In 2008, I was skiing at Falls Creek and I skied onto a chairlift and was introduced to Malcolm Mackay, who's now my partner. And under our ski goggles, a spark was made.
Oh, that's so sweet.
On the chairlift ride. And he's a medical doctor and he's been following a plant-based diet for about 30 years now. And So, of course, when we started to get to know each other, we lived in different cities, so that was very, very challenging. But because it was early winter when I met him, we actually met back at Falls Creek Ski Resort several times that winter before we cool. worked out how we were going to commute and to continue our relationship. So when he talked about a plant-based diet, I really struggled with that. I sort of got the concept of what a vegan diet was, and kind of knew that, okay, he doesn't eat dairy and eggs, which I love, and that was difficult. But particularly the no oil part, I really struggled to get my head around that. And so for about 6 months, I would say, I kind of, when we were together, I would eat the way he wanted to eat. Mm-hmm. And when we were apart, I would eat the way I'd always done. Mm-hmm. I had two teenage children at the time, and so I was just, you know, doing what I've always done at home. I thought I was in my 40s, and I always thought I'd eaten a healthful diet. Mm. And I was doing everything that I was told. I was having my, I had lashings of yogurt on my morning muesli because I needed the calcium, so I thought. And I would always have that little bit of red meat because I'd had some iron issues a few years earlier, and so I had to keep up the red meat for iron, even though I, you know, wasn't a big fan of it. So I was just a typical mum of two teenage children. You know, I always ate a lot of vegetables. I always ate some grains and vegetables and fruit, but you know, meat and dairy and eggs were always in there. And I slowly leaned in, you know, because I would eat this way with him, and I would get back home and sometimes want to have a bit of a junk food attack when I would arrive, because he lived in Adelaide and, I'm in Melbourne. And anyway, so it took about the next sort of, well, it was pretty much almost a year that I was just leaning in towards eating smaller portions, you know, giving up red meat as I understood I didn't need it. Mm. And it actually took, he was very gentle with me. He wasn't pushing for me to change. But one day we were having a conversation, and he he didn't mention the name of this book, but he showed me a chart in a book. It was a table of the association between breast cancer and dairy, or, you know, protein consumption. Yeah. And I took that book home and quietly read it over the next few days, and that was the China study. And when I got to the end of the third chapter, when he talks about dairy protein, I got it. I just thought, oh, no.
It just clicked for you.
It clicked, and I thought, I've got to give up the dairy, and which was a real struggle for me. But for the cheese and the for the yogurt, I didn't have it that very next day. I struggled to get the little bit of milk out of my tea and coffee and the cheese, but I worked on it over the next, you know, literally a matter of weeks.
And so do you remember being more and more interested in, I guess, the theory behind these things, not just changing the way you're eating, but kind of finding out why? Was that immediate interest?
Yeah, absolutely. Reading the China study blew me away in terms of, why didn't I know this? So my profession, I'm a librarian, and I had worked at a university library or a couple of university libraries for nearly 25 years. And for many of those years, I'd worked closely with researchers and academics. Even I was the librarian for biomedical science department for some years. So I was close to the concepts of nutrition. I was ordering books. In fact, would you believe, I looked it up, I'd actually ordered the China study
for
the library I worked in about 2 years earlier, and I hadn't even registered. I just saw it on a list and ordered it. And so I couldn't believe that I didn't know any of this. And so I had that skepticism, of course. Well, if I don't know this, you know, is this really true? Mm. And I know other people have had a similar response, and that's why when you go and Google T. Colin Campbell, the China study, one of the, in the first five results that come up, you'll see that the stuff that's trying to debunk, you know, his book. And I wasn't able to go beyond that, so I just started this kind of voracious search for knowledge in all of this. And Malcolm is really happy that because of my librarian skills, I connected him to so much more information. You know, he was sort of wasn't a big internet person at the time.
Yeah.
And so I was able to find some of the online, there was online blogs, and Facebook was sort of in its early days, but connecting to various, pages following some of the big names in plant-based nutrition. And I just, it pretty much took over my life, and you could say, well, it still has.
I absolutely, can relate to that. Let me just take you back one second to when we were talking about, the fact that when you kind of Google T. Colin Campbell, that there's, debunking the China study or whatever. Yeah. What's your opinion around that? Why do you think people are so set out to in inverted commas, debunk these things? Or what's the drive behind? I mean, the information's clearly there. The research is there. So is it people just being defensive because they're so used to what they do? What's your opinion on that?
Well, there's two threads to that. There's the reason why some of those posts are even there to be found on the internet, I think, has, a little bit more of a kind of a chilling story behind them, in that they've been written and carefully crafted so that they come up in a Google search. So that there are obviously people out there that want that message that T. Colin Campbell has to be kind of, for doubt to be sown over what he said. In terms of the actual book, my answer when anyone has said to me, oh, hasn't that been debunked? And I just sort of roll my eyes and say, there's over 700 peer-reviewed papers referenced in his book. Which ones of those have been retracted?
Absolutely.
People sometimes get mixed up with the China project, that is, his research in China that he reports on in the China study. And that is, a very large epidemiological research. And so, people try and kind of crush that, thinking that that's all they need to do. But the China study has just so much more in it than that. And T. Colin Campbell himself has published, I think, about 300, over 300 research papers. So
yeah, wow.
you can't debunk that at
no,
all.
Absolutely.
But in terms of the response, because I have friends and I have even relatives who have found the debunking stuff having, read his book and thought, wow, and then gone and found stuff that's put a question over it. And I see that very much down to, you want to believe that what you've been doing is right. You want to believe that I can continue to do what I've always done. And I think that's what drives so many people in this area, that they hear a bit of it. And, whether it's that they watch Forks Over Knives, which does change many, many lives, but sometimes I hear from people that say, oh, yeah, I watch that, but, that people want to believe that it's okay to continue to live their life the way they've been doing, and that their food habits are good. And I understand that mindset, because I know that I was in a place before I met Malcolm where I thought I was doing the right thing. Yeah. And if someone had said to me, maybe you could eat a better diet, I'd probably be defensive and say, but I eat a good diet.
Yeah.
My diet's good. And so that's, I really understand where people are coming from, and it's really hard to know how to counter that. And in fact, I'm going to bring up something that I know we were corresponding through an online group recently, which is research into the benefits of olive oil. And every time you try and put up the stuff which shows, detrimental effects on, blood flow and autoimmune diseases, everyone, I've been with people in the past few weeks who have been saying, but, I've got all this stuff I can show you. Of the benefits of olive oil. So my focus just very recently is, well, let's shine the light on the quality, on the actual research that people are talking about as showing the benefit.
Yeah. And I think you're right. I mean, I remember this because I guess it started with Ben, my husband, his dad, sending us this article. And, from the outset, you look at this article and you're like, okay, well, and I myself don't actually love Michael Mosley, but a lot of people my parents' age listen to him like, this is gospel, what this guy is saying. So, you know, we read the article that his father had sent us and we were quite interested because his dad had started pouring olive oil on his cereal and all sorts of things. And, you know, our first reaction was obviously like, oh my God, what are you doing? This is terrible. But then wanted to follow up with this. Okay, so we read the article, Michael Mosley, and so we're interested, you know, what is behind this, what he's saying, because everything that Ben and I had believed up until now was that, you know, olive oil is so detrimental to health and this is what I've been coaching people around and all these things. So when articles come out like this, and this is why I'm interested in asking people like you who are great with actually finding the research and going further and looking at these studies, because people like myself, and I think there's a lot of people out there and in the, you know, the kind of online communities that we're in, don't have the maybe time or maybe expertise or ability to sift through all these studies and separate the good from the bad. So I guess that's something I really appreciate about you and the group that you're running, is that there are people there that can sift through these things who we trust and respect, that can separate, you know, fact from fiction. And in fact, this particular time when we looked further into the article and you helped me do that, it was absolute nonsense, really, what this guy was saying. And, you know, I then asked the question, did Michael Mosley even read the read the research? Because it seemed to make no sense what he was saying when we looked more into it. So are you saying that that's something that's common, that people like, you know, lay people, I guess, or like myself, go, oh my God, we can't sift through what's right or wrong? Like, how do you make that distinction?
Look, there's several things in there, and it's not only lay people, because I'm also, I'm able to see the literature that is being sent to medical doctors, because I can, you know, look over Malcolm's shoulder or read the magazines that come into the house. And there's something that is going on in terms of the peer-reviewed papers that get published. Particularly if there's any industry funding behind them, the abstract will be written with perfect spin, right? So it will always be, showcasing the best things that were found in that particular research. And you know that most people are never going to go beyond the abstract. In the case of what we're talking about, the initial article that someone had posted was a BBC report on the Michael Mosley program talking about olive oil. And I don't even think there was a direct link to the peer-reviewed paper from that article, but I went and found it, of course.
Yeah,
and, thank you. So you go and find the original paper, and then the next thing is it behind a paywall? I think this one wasn't, but that's another issue that often the general public, even the medical profession, don't necessarily have access to peer-reviewed papers, and so the abstracts can be written in a way that they know that most people will never go beyond it. So in regard to that olive oil one, I was reading out. I mean, I can understand up to a point. You know, I've done a new postgraduate nutrition course, and I understand a little bit about reading the statistics, but statistics do my head in as well. So often, often I don't quite understand the significance of something. You know, they say this and they say that. So it's a typical thing is that I'll have read something during the day. Malcolm gets home at night and I read out something to him. And I say, what does this mean? So I'm reading out something to him and it's about this. I've never heard of it before. It was proteomic biomarkers. And I said, what are they?
Yeah.
And he said, well, he actually didn't know. And on that evening, I think I'd posted in the group, I haven't got the time to go looking. But I have had a little look since then. And it would seem that these are just, new experimental biomarkers that currently have no clinical application. That's why, a doctor doesn't yet know about these as something that is, supposedly a measure of your risk for cardiovascular disease or your risk for diabetes or a kidney disease. So this article actually, or the research in the article, had actually said that they didn't find significance with for kidney disease and diabetes, but they did find statistical significance for cardiovascular disease. And it was comparing two types of olive oil, your extra virgin olive oil and your standard olive oil. So it wasn't comparing people who had no oil that had a handful of blueberries in their day. It was just focusing on these very, very minute, you know, new experimental biomarkers. And in the literature I've looked at since, they admit that they're unsure about the clinical applications of these biomarkers. So really, you could read that whole article and go, so what, in terms of people's health? You know, it's just there's so much research going on to find ways of, you know, not only for, you know, drugs for people who are ill, but testing. You know, there's huge market in developing new tests. So this is what this was about. It makes me quite furious to see, and I have, you know, an example within my extended family since that Michael Mosley episode of someone else who is like your father-in-law, is it?
Yeah.
Who is adding extra olive oil. He was almost convinced, that he should stay away from olive oil, but now is happily pouring it on. And as a result of watching that show. So it makes me really, really angry.
It's just so misleading, isn't it?
And the thing is that I believe in being evidence-based. You know, I believe in practicing nutrition as Malcolm does in practicing medicine, in being evidence-based. But it's like, how do you tease out? You know, people say to me, oh, well, you know, you're selective in the evidence you find. And I can find something, you know, that says the opposite. And so it's really difficult. And it just comes down to you've got to look at the quality of the research. What did they really find? And this is, and the next question, which doesn't get asked, it doesn't really get pointed to, is it clinically significant? Mm. And so if you think of things like, you know, the research that Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn has published, where he's taken 200 consecutive patients who have, you know, gone to his low-fat, whole-food, plant-based diet, and I think a few dropped out, and the dropouts became a fascinating study in themselves because many of those had further heart events. So these were cardiovascular disease patients who'd had events. And I think out of the 200, 189 of them continued to eat a very good diet, and there was like one event out of the 100, about 180 people over the subsequent 3.5-4 years. And that is clinically hugely significant. But people look at that as an isolated study. It's not randomized. And, you know, so therefore it doesn't mean anything. What means something is a study where, you know, you give this group, you know, of 3,000 people, you divide them in half and you give half of them this drug and half of them a placebo, and you find some effect where it reduces risk by 30%. And they say, well, over thousands of people, that means something if we reduce risk by 30%. And then you'd look at it, and this is the case with statins, 70% of people continue to have heart events. So that's that thing, but difference between statistical significance and clinical significance that I'm really interested in with this new whole, with the nutrition area.
And so... So working as a librarian, when did the penny drop, or when did things change for you where the interest in the research around nutrition becomes stronger than your kind of passion about what you were doing before? Can you remember the point where you'd kind of decided to take this nutrition interest into a career, into a new kind of way of life?
That's a very good question. For me, it was really a very slow evolution. I was in a full-time job up until four years ago this month, and working at a university library in a job that I loved, and it was working with researchers, and I was very passionately engaged with the job, but a little bit overworking in an institution like the university I was in. And I had developed a little bit of work on the side, training that I was working with a couple of different organisations and being sent interstate to train librarians in particular areas. And so that excited me as well. And it was a combination of, I'd started to work with Malcolm in building our website. This is going back just over 4 years ago. And so I had that as a passion. And so my interest in nutrition it came from reading the China study and spending years just reading and following links and reading books. And so that what I did 4 years ago was that I decided to leap out of, you know, my permanent secure job to do this librarian training that I'm still doing, and but also to just explore nutrition. But I really had no idea where I was going to take it. Yeah. And so the first thing I did was I did the T. Colin Campbell certificate in plant-based nutrition. I did that literally, you know, with my kind of annual leave payout from leaving my job. I enrolled in that. And you know, I love doing that, but that just left me even hungrier for more information. Yeah. So I then did the McDougall Starch Solution Certificate because thought, well, we wanted to start running seminars, and I felt like I didn't quite get, like, you don't get the practical help from the T. Colin Campbell course. It's very theoretical. And so I was sort of looking around for what else I could do to give me a little bit more confidence in being able to help others. And so I found that the Starch Solution Certificate was very helpful for that. And at this, literally within the same month that I was doing that, we went on our first McDougall Adventure holiday. And so
Where was that to?
Costa Rica in 2014. And so I met Dr. McDougall and his wife, Mary. And so that, you know, I was just sort of passionate about all things in that area. And it was coming back from that holiday and also and sort of finishing the Starch Solution Certificate that I then thought, well, what next? And I'd been looking at mainstream courses within Australia as to what I could do. And my undergraduate qualifications are in arts, not in science. So I'd always thought that I couldn't do a postgraduate nutrition course. I was aware of the course that Malcolm had done sort of 20 years earlier, but I thought I wouldn't get in. But when I looked into it, I realised that they do take people without a science background into the postgraduate certificate in human nutrition, which can articulate into a master's in human nutrition.
Right.
And so I thought, well, you know, give it a go. I applied and I got in. So that was in second half of 2014, I started that course. And that was fascinating. Because I didn't have the science background, I just had to put my head down and immerse myself in, you know, the biochemistry, the physiology. And I knew that there was, you know, a big exam worth 60% of the marks end of the first semester. And so I just kept my head down low and worked really, really hard to get my head around it all. And I was so grateful that I had made myself do this. Because, you know, I stopped at the end of the graduate certificate because I decided that it was just going to cost too much money to go on and do a master's. And besides, it is pretty hell when you've got assignments to write and essays and exams to study for. So I stopped at the end of what would be just, you know, like a 6-month course, but I did it over 18 months, sort of a year of each semester. And I'm really happy I did this course. But I often get people asking me about, can you study plant-based nutrition in Australia? And, well, no, you can't. Mm-hmm. The courses of the mainstream courses are very, because I've worked closely with academics for years, I just knew that it was not my role to try and educate them.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah, that'd be an interesting point.
Mm. So when there were times to write assignments where you could choose topics, I knew that if I chose anything that was going to try and prove a bit of a point about the healthfulness of a plant-based diet, that I was asking for trouble. And so I would just do something that I would slip in a little bit of something just that would make me feel good. Like I remember having to write an essay, and we were able to choose our own topic. We had to look at the impact of a particular food or nutrient on a particular disease. So I looked at it had to be quite specific. So I think I narrowed it down to whole grains and cardiovascular disease. Mm. And And I was able to just sort of step back in summing the whole thing up by saying, you know, about whole dietary patterns and, you know, only, you know, and referring to Ornish and Esselstyn's work about, you know, that the only thing to reverse heart disease. But in doing so, I was still really careful because I thought the marker is not going to be enlightened by my paper.
Right.
And there's no point in trying to, in doing anything that's going to make me lose marks. So, you know, I was very careful in the way I said that. That was just my little bit of fun.
So were they teaching you things that you didn't believe in or that went against what you had just learned?
There were in some aspects. I mean, the beginning, the very first unit you do is the whole, you know, sort of nutrition 101. And in that, what I realized is that there is no doubt that the healthiest human diet is one, you know, with a high intake of whole grains, legumes, vegetables and fruit. Mm. You know, there is no doubt about that. The doubt is, and the thing that's presented even in that sort of, you know, classic nutrition, you know, introductory nutrition textbook, is that when it comes down to looking at nutrients and nutrient deficiency, you know, the animal foods are sort of presented as a good source, you know. In fact, I used to joke when I was studying for the exam in that subject that, you know, I'd say to Malcolm, the answer is liver, you know. you know, what's a good source of, you know, vitamin A, or there was a couple of different nutrients that you'd go, liver, because, you know, if I kind of clung to my own ideas and wanted to, you know, I might not do well in the exam. The subject that was most difficult for me was there was a unit that's called Diet and Disease, and I was fascinated in the way that was taught, and each week would be looking at a new disease, you know, sort of diabetes, cardiovascular disease, hypertension, and I'd be thinking, oh, they're going to get to it. You know, it was all online. So I was listening to these lectures online and you'd have the lecture notes and I'd be thinking, you know, have they found Ornish or in the diabetes one? You know, have they found Barnard?
Oh, and
no. You know, it's like the stuff that we're aware of, they're either too old or they're just too isolated as being considered a body of evidence. And so they don't get presented. And so the hardest thing was studying for that exam because there were things that I had to unknow.
Yeah.
Like there were things that I had to think, okay, you know, the answer to this question is not what I know. What I know works in the population. The answer to this question is what my lecturer told me. So
that must have been quite frustrating. I wouldn't be the kind of person that would find that easy.
I don't think I did brilliantly in that particular exam, actually. I did well in the overall subject because I'd got good marks in assignments. But
I think maybe your next calling is to go and be a lecturer in this course, Jenny, and set the record straight.
I wouldn't play the game, so I wouldn't. I just wouldn't be a candidate. So yeah, that was interesting, and I encourage others to do. I have this conversation quite often with people. They write to me, or when I meet people, whether they're interested in doing medicine or nutrition, they say, you know, what? How can you do it? You know, is there anything plant based anywhere in Australia? And you just think, no, you've just got to sit down and keep your head down. And I think of Thomas Campbell, you know, who co-authored the China study. Mm. He then, after writing the China study with his father, went and studied medicine. And he I've heard him at a conference talk about how he just had to put his head down and you know, learn what he had to learn. And he had to sort of, in a sense, suppress all of his knowledge about nutrition for the duration of getting through that course.
That's interesting.
And so that's pretty much what I would say to people who are doing, you know, it's good to get some qualifications that are recognised within this country in the mainstream health professions. And then you do a little bit on the side to get more confidence in the plant-based area, such as the T. Colin Campbell course. Some other little online courses I've thrown in because I'm sort of always a junkie for new information is working with Pam Popper and the Wellness Forum. She's got some great courses as well. And so I've enrolled in a couple of those. So you can learn from the experts in plant-based nutrition and sort of put that alongside what you learn in any mainstream sort of health profession qualification.
So tell me more about starting up the website and that's being Whole Food Plant-Based Health. Like what was the original purpose of that website and how, I guess, has it evolved since then?
It was very much Malcolm's sort of idea, and years before he'd always thought he had a book in him as such, that he had all these ideas and he wanted to get them down in writing. And so in being together with me, he realised that maybe getting it out there on the web, I was very much saying people that write books, you don't make money from writing books, so you may as well just put it all out there for free. And so he spent a lot of time the year before, I think back in 2012, he'd just come to live and work in Melbourne. And so as a doctor, you've got to kind of start from scratch. He was working at a medical clinic that was relatively new, and therefore he wasn't totally busy. So, he wasn't working long hours and had sort of time during the day on various days. And he just sort of put his head down and started writing different sections. And at the time, I had no idea how it was all going to come together, and I didn't know how to build websites. And so we had this idea we had to find someone who could build a website. And later on that year, he actually changed practices, and he had a few patients at the clinic he was at that were interested in plant-based. And so he thought, gee, in case, people need to find me, maybe I need a website just for Dr. Malcolm Mackay. And again, I wasn't there at that point skilled in doing websites, and I was working full time in my uni library job. And so I found someone else, that could build a very simple website. It was really just, a page with an about attached to it.
Yeah.
Had links to where he was. And in going through all that, and the person who built it, did it well and didn't charge us a lot of money, but I then realised he had so much content for this big website. I thought, this is going to cost him like $10,000 to get it off the ground. And we were coming up to Christmas of that year, and I just thought, I'm going to give it a go, and I'm going to give it a go at building it myself. So I took an extra week of annual leave just after Christmas, and I immersed myself watching YouTube channels and how to build WordPress websites, and I'm just completely self-taught. And
that's awesome.
It's a very simple website in terms of its structure, and I'm not in a hurry to change it, to make it more modern. But it's just there as information, and so. Then in putting it together, the bit that I love as a librarian, I've been in the business of connecting people to the most useful resources for their area of interest. That's been my whole life's work. And so I love that part of the website, that I try and choose the best resources for whatever it is, for whatever disease or resources for weight loss. So basically most of the text content is written by Malcolm, and I pull it together, edit it, and I do write a bit of text as well, but it's mostly his, and I do all the adding the resources. So that's sort of how that comes together.
It's such a fantastic site. As you say, it's just so, it's like jam-packed full of content, and it's sort of that you could just go there for all the information you need around plant-based health. Like it's kind of a one-stop shop, which is really cool.
We have so many other pages in development, though, that we just think, we just need, it's like I need that week off, and I need him to have some time off to get back to looking at it. So it's always a work in progress. There's things that we think, we wrote that 3 years ago, we need to change it. We know more now. We're forever learning. There's always new things coming up that we think are really important, and
So within the like whole food plant-based topic as a broad topic, what do you kind of find yourself wanting to write about or just learn more about? Like, is there at the moment a specific interest of yours?
For me personally, it's answering those questions. We started an FAQ section, and I've got about another half a dozen questions under yeah. development for those moments. Whether it's through the online Facebook group, when someone asks, you know, that question about, you know, what about alcohol? What about soy? Mm. What about, what about, you know, raw? Should I be all raw? And so it's answering all of those questions from very much a kind of an evidence-based approach to look at, you know, what is, you know, firstly, what is all the other plant-based experts said? So I always sort of tap into all of those. And also what does the peer review literature say, so that I, and then we can sort of put a few paragraphs together that kind of say, well, this is, you know, this is the way we would approach this. So there's quite a few that I have, quite a few of those that I want to work on. Yeah. But I always like to get Malcolm to sort of go through them carefully as well to make sure that we're on track.
Yeah. What's your favourite book? What's your favourite book around this whole food plant-based movement?
Oh, gee, that's a really tough one. I see this from the eyes of the librarian that I've been for all these years. I see it in terms of where is someone at, and so I think, oh, you know, that book is so good for someone who's in this place. You know, if you're asking me, well, which is the book I like the most, I find that really hard to answer because I want to know them all.
let me change the question. What's the most recent book that you've enjoyed on this topic?
Okay, well, now I have to confess that I'm not good at finishing things.
No,
I've really enjoyed the first few chapters of The Cheese Trap.
Yeah, cool.
But I haven't finished it.
Yeah.
I kind of get into these things and then get busy. And prior to that, I'd read the McDougall's new one from, he published while we were in California last September, his Healthiest Diet on the Planet. Now, I knew a lot of what was in that. You know,
yeah.
I'd already seen it he's kind of repackaged it in a fun format.
Yeah, cool.
And that's a lot of fun. I guess more of my reading is not so much books. It's more reading articles and reading and, you know, both, yeah, research papers as well as articles written by various people and also listening to podcasts.
Such a good way to consume information, isn't it? It's so handy.
It's good. You learn so much in listening to all, and I've got my favourite podcasts, and definitely yours is one of them.
About your favourite recipe book? Do you guys follow recipe books, or you've got kind of your staple meals now and you just rotate them?
Yeah, I'm not a big recipe person. I have bought just about every recipe book that is that falls within the whole food plant-based, you know, sort of low, you know, sort of no oil, et cetera.
Yeah.
And I have them in my house. I have them on the shelf, but I so rarely ever look at them. But I tell you, there is one recipe book that has really, really enchanted me, and that is Kathy Fisher's book, Straight Up Food.
Yeah.
Now, she's got a fabulous website, and nearly everything that's in her book is free on her website. That's, you know, she's such a generous person. Mm. Her book came out late last year, and I was one of the people that helped crowdfund its publication.
Oh, fantastic.
And so I got a few copies, and I just think it's a beautiful book. And the shame is that for someone, in fact, I haven't even got a link to it on I've got a section on our website of recipe books and links. I haven't been pushing it because it's actually really expensive to get one copy sent to Australia.
Yeah.
It turns out to be, if you go online and you order it, it's $35 US to buy the book. And I say it's a fabulous book. But it's another $15 US to have it shipped here. And so $50 US, what's that? You know, nearly $70 Australian.
Yeah.
So I haven't been pushing it with people because I think, oh, everyone's going to say that's too expensive. But it is absolutely my favourite. Any time that I want to try something new, that's where I go now.
I have to agree. I've been going to her website a lot. It's so refreshing going to websites where you know it'll stick within all the guidelines of what you need. Mm. You don't even have to omit things or change that for that. It's like, okay, I can just look at that and follow a recipe.
Mm. I did actually meet Kathy Fisher in February when I was in California, and I mentioned that you know, it's a bit expensive. I bought more copies when I was there. And she said, "Oh, you know, is there a way we can look at it?" And I haven't taken that any further as to whether, you know, whether I can get a box sent to Australia and then try and on sell. Anyway, I just think it's a great book.
Awesome. You and Malcolm have attended a number of the international plant-based conferences run by the Plantrition Project. Mm-hmm. What have been some of your favourite talks there? What have been kind of standouts for you?
Well, I first went in 2014, and for me, that was my first encounter with all the big stars. I mean, at that point, yes, I had met Dr. McDougall, and he was at that conference as well. But it was so exciting to meet T. Colin Campbell, Caldwell, you know, Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn, Dr. Michael Greger. I'm not very good at putting myself up there for the photo opportunity, but I did at that conference, and I've got a lovely gallery.
Cool.
Sometimes I couldn't drag Malcolm into the picture because he was too busy talking to someone, so I've got a wonderful array of photos with all the stars. And I will share that I had the most magical moment with T. Colin Campbell at that conference when there was a speaker that I was less interested in. I'd rather not say much more about it. It was someone that I think didn't quite fit the bill for that conference. And it was the last speaker before tea time on that day. And I was just looking forward to going back to the room, putting my feet up on the bed.
Yeah.
And so we were in the front row, and I'm muttering to Malcolm, "I'm going to leave. I'm sick of this." And I didn't. And he's sort of like, you know, we're in the front row. Anyway, I just got up and walked out. I just thought I had enough. And I walked outside, and there's this area where there's this couch, and no one else is there except T. Colin Campbell sitting alone on the couch.
Ah, opportunity.
I sort of walked out, and I just thought, I have to go and sit there. What on earth am I going to say? It was just like, you can't pass this one up. So mm-hmm. I did. I just went and sat next to him, and you know, I felt like a giggling teenager. You know? It was like, I didn't know how to begin a conversation with him. Oh, he is such a wonderful, wonderful man, and he was even quite discreet. He'd left that talk for the same reason.
Oh, that's so funny. That you had that in common. That could be your icebreaker.
All I would say is that the presenter was not evidence-based.
Interesting.
And I'd even been sitting in the conference with my iPad looking up stuff online while he was talking, thinking, nah, he hasn't got that right.
Wrong crowd.
That was a very magic moment to have my sort of, you know, 5 minutes on sitting on a couch next to
thanks for sharing that. That's
Professor
awesome.
Campbell. Yeah. So, you know, in terms of who are the best presenters, I was just in awe of them all at that particular conference. And I missed the one a year later because I had an injury, an encounter with a dog just a week beforehand. So I couldn't go. I had a fracture in my knee.
Oh.
So that was 2015. So I went again last year. And, last year we did the double. The McDougall Advanced Study Weekend was just the weekend before the International Plant-Based Nutrition Conference. And so Malcolm and I, alongside with I think another nine other Aussies, did the same thing. It was And I would almost say last year, the presenters at the McDougall weekend almost overshadowed the International Plant-Based Nutrition Conference. It really was a stunning lineup that he had. And a couple of them were at both, like Dr. Dean Ornish was at both. But I think the talk he gave at the McDougall one was a little bit more sort of intimate and but I mean, we wouldn't miss the International Plant-Based Nutrition Conference. It's not just hearing from the big stars in plant-based nutrition. It's hearing from kind of that next generation of health practitioners and how they're putting this into practice in their work. And so that's, you know, as valuable as hearing what, you know, the big guns. Is hearing from those. And so in that, a couple of years ago, both Craig McDougall and Thomas Campbell spoke exactly on that, putting it into their clinical practice. And it's not straightforward. You know, it's not a case of just saying, if you're a doctor, of just kind of saying to a patient, yes, well, you could eat a plant-based diet and, reduce your medication. There is so much, and I know, you know, you're a health coach. There is so much that, needs to be the support that people need to be given to make dietary change is huge. And medical practitioners just don't, the way it works here in Australia with your sort of 15-minute consultation with a doctor, it's just not really practical. So along the way, in addition to all my other studies, I have done the wellness coaching course, and so I'm sort of getting myself set up to be that person.
Fantastic.
To be able to provide more support, say, to the patients that Malcolm has seen.
Awesome.
In regard to nutrition.
So you run this amazing Facebook community called Whole Food Plant-Based Aussies, which I'm part of, and which all Whole Food Australians basically, Whole Food Plant-Based Australians are part of, it seems. It's a fantastic community. It's really supportive. Everybody there is so knowledgeable and willing to help each other, which is something I really love. And, I go back to the example of the oil article. You know, obviously being a health coach and being a plant-based health coach, sometimes it's hard for me to ask questions in different groups because I feel like, oh, I should know the answer to this, but I think this is something, especially this world of plant-based nutrition where there's things coming out all the time and new studies and it's, there's so much momentum behind it. I think we're all constantly learning. So I think something I really appreciate from that group is, people like yourself or other moderators of the group, there's no judgment. If someone, like myself even, who potentially should know the answers to these questions, has a question or has a concern, everybody is more than willing to kind of pitch in or lead you to different resources or even, like yourself, go and actually read the article yourself. So I really appreciate what the group brings in terms of that. Can you see over the years some common themes that come up in that group? Like, what is the most, from your opinion or from your experience, what's the most talked about or most kind of the hottest topic within that group of people who are really interested in this area of nutrition?
Oh, that's a tricky one. One that jumps into my mind, I'm not sure if this is one of the hottest topic, is sort of dealing with others who are not supportive. Mm. I think that comes up quite regularly. The sort of the post about whether it's their partner or their mother-in-law or someone in their life who is making it harder for them to stick with eating this way. And also there's, and I suppose closely with that is some of the agony people feel when loved ones are not well, and are not well due to, dietary diseases, and they can't get through to them that, to change their diet would see a huge improvement in their health. So I think those sort of two intertwined topics about dealing with others is one of the ones that I see. I mean, a lot of the stuff in the group is all about, you know, recipes and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I take a bit of a backseat. You know, I'm so grateful for the other moderators who have much stronger in that area.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's probably a big one, and that comes up. That comes up, and also that the other thing is the, and this is the area that I always like to sort of jump in and help with, is when something has suddenly, you know, in everyone's social media feed for the day, that article showing that, you know, we should all be eating fish, or, you know, vegetarians have more depression, or, you know, these things do the rounds, and it drives, you know, it, for those who aren't as confident in the research literature as we are, it makes it really hard for them, because they're possibly having arguments with people in their world, or whether it's an online argument through Facebook, or whether it's in their household, of them saying, oh, well, you know, this article says this, so what are you going to say about that? And so I think that's where the group really can help. A few years ago, I used to think sometimes we were focusing a little too much on the negative with that, and I'd be thinking, oh, let's not post the negative article, let's just post the positives. But, right. That was sort of something I used to think about. But I've got used to the fact that, okay, because what it often ends up is that we provide clickbait, you know, another couple of thousand people are going to go and click on a link, which is telling them something that is quite different to what we're saying the evidence shows. So it's sort of trying to get around that. But I think that people find that valuable. So that sort of unpacking, you know, the latest research that then gets put into, you know, your news feed as a, you know, whether it's an article in an overseas newspaper or a local newspaper, and people are left scratching their heads saying, you know, what do we do with this?
Absolutely.
And so I think I really like that part of it. But as I say, the group, the most, you know, the main posts in the group are around the sort of the recipes and, you know, how do I make this to be whole food plant-based?
Which
I
is
think
awesome.
That's so valuable.
Oh, absolutely.
But I take a back seat in those because I often haven't a clue. I don't bake, and I don't, I eat a very simple diet, so I don't often make new things.
So I guess just lastly, you know, going a bit deeper into what you said, sort of a lot of people ask in the group about, you know, family and friends, and this part of the question came from someone in the group, and their question was, you know, how do you reconcile within yourself, I guess, when you see friends, families, or strangers still eating what you consider would be a poor diet? How do you tackle these issues within your own family, friend kind of network?
It is very hard. I have listened to many, many hours of psychologist Dr. Doug Lyle on this, and I've had the pleasure of hearing him at some of these conferences I've been to, and read his work. And so I'm very aware that of what I see as the best strategy to deal with it. But when it's personal, it's really hard to do the right thing in the moment. And so, you do find yourself in conflict with people because you've maybe attempted to say something, you know, to suggest that maybe it's not a good idea to pour that coconut oil into, you know, over your meal. Mm-hmm. And the pushback you get, it's like, what would you know? You know, they've got their reliable internet sources that tell them that they should be doing that. And when you sort of sit back and you see people, and particularly, you know, in my generation and, you know, and sort of relatives of my age group, and you think, I know that you've got heart disease. It's not diagnosed. It's just, you know what's going on inside their arteries based on the way they eat. And you just think there's going to, you know, it's the train wreck that you see coming. And that is really, really hard. because you want to kind of shake someone and say, you know, please, please, you know, I'm saying this because I've read so much, I've read so much evidence, and I just know that the things are not going to go well long term, even if you're getting away with it now. But I also know that that doesn't work. It just doesn't work. You know, whether it's my generation, whether it's the younger generation, when I see people who have, you know, autoimmune diseases and they get caught up in the, you know, they go gluten-free, which kind of means up that they go, you know, they eat no grains and they eat no legumes and they end up on a more paleo diet because of their health. And you just think, oh, I want to help you. I find that really, really hard. And so in some ways, if you were to look at my own personal Facebook wall, I'm quite silent. I mean, I'm not completely silent, but I don't post much on my Facebook wall because I've got, you know, connections, whether it's relatives and friends from the past that I just think, oh, I know they're just going to be bugged by this. Sometimes yeah. I think it's worth bugging them, but mostly I save doing, you know, my sort of expressing myself to the group. I don't do much on my wall, so people who, you know, who kind of friend me from the plant-based area might be disappointed that they don't see much. Yeah. But it's also that sensitivity that I try not be too in the face because, you know, Facebook for me now goes back more than a decade and I've got people who were a big part of my life then, interestingly, who are less a part of my life now, you know, and partly it is the plant-based nutrition because I've ended up somewhere else.
I think you're right in kind of, I don't know, I guess I agree with you and my point of view is I tend to focus my energy where it's asked for or, you know, in my personal life I would just lead by example, you know, I'm going to eat this way. I remember listening to Doug Lyle, like you said, and him saying, this is an experiment that I'm trying on myself. It seems to be working so far, so I'm going to keep doing that. And people ask me how I bounce out of bed at 5:45 with two toddlers and still take myself to the gym because I'm so energetic or why my skin looks so good or how I've been able to, you know, maintain a reasonably lean body. It's okay, well, I'll lead by example in that way. And if people come to me asking, then I'm more than happy to share. But I just think the same as you do. I think if people aren't ready to hear that message, then it's never going to work by shoving it down their throat. Yeah. So I absolutely agree with you on that one.
Yeah. It's still difficult though, because you're just looking for that moment when you can, you know, drop some little pearl of wisdom. And it is tempting, and sometimes you do it, and you know, just every so often, you know, it turns out well that someone does actually, you know, listen or read or follow a lead that you sent them, and so that's really rewarding. But it's difficult, you know, it's very difficult. And it's so rewarding when people close to you do change their diet, and I do have, you know, quite a few in my network and family who have, and that is just wonderful. But actually, just one other thing on that thing of leading by example, because I've never been overweight, I was probably a little bit heavier before I changed my diet, but certainly I always have appeared lean to people. And I've never on the outside had any sort of obvious chronic disease, and therefore people just sort of pass it off as, oh, well, you're lucky, you know, that you've got your health. So I don't necessarily think that leading by example is certainly from people who have, you know, made up my life, you know, over the years, that they're necessarily going to find that my example is going to convince them to make any change, because they just kind of look. And I think Malcolm gets this as well. He's lean and healthy looking and not had any chronic disease, and instead of realizing that, well, he doesn't have chronic disease because of the way he's eaten all these years, they look at him and think that, well, he's lucky, you know, he's lucky he's avoided these things.
A learning for all of us, absolutely. No wonder it's such a hot topic, I guess, within the group, because we obviously all kind of struggle with that and wanting the best for the people we love and care about and wanting to pass that message on. It's been such fun talking to you.
We've been talking for an hour.
Thank you so much. It's been really cool getting to know you better and knowing, you know, what influenced you and a bit of your own story. I'm sure so many people are going to be interested in this. So I appreciate your time today.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Anna.
No problems. Thanks, Jenny. See you later.
Bye.
Bye. How did you guys find that? I really loved it. So easy to talk to, really interesting. I loved hearing about her own journey. I guess I love bringing into the light people who do a lot of the work behind the scenes. You know, the other week I had Lucy Stegley from Raw Events Australia, and this week with Jenny. You know, these people aren't necessarily in the limelight, you know, on stage presenting or any of those things, but really do the hard work behind the scenes to make this information, these resources, be really accessible to us. So I absolutely appreciated Jenny. I loved speaking to her. Please do reach out to her through her website, Whole Food Plant-Based Health, or join the group Whole Food Plant-Based Aussies on Facebook, because they are both really wonderful resources. And I know she'd love to hear from you. All right, guys, I will see you back here again for another episode of the Big Impact Podcast. Oh, and before I go, I just want to let you know that I am up and running again with my intention is weekly newsletter, where I share the latest podcast interviews. I share a weekly recipe with you, and I share with you the latest information or knowledge that I'm interested in terms of plant-based nutrition and health. It might be an article that I've read. It might be a blog post that I've written. It's just something that I'm interested in and researching about or immersed in that week that I thought that I would share with you guys as well. So if you want to be part of that newsletter and stay up to date with everything and up to date with some of the events I'm doing, I'm going to be speaking at a few events in Sydney this year, you can jump over to www.annachisholm.com, and there's a banner at the top where you can sign up to the newsletter, and that way you'll receive my love every week in your inbox. I'd love to have you. Cool. All right, guys, that's it from me. See you back here next week. Bye-bye.